The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
Folks, I think we've got some solutions here to the Charlie Kirk assassination. First, there's not a chance in the world that Tyler Robinson could have taken the kill shot. And two, that kill shot was a high-velocity rifle round that ended up in Charlie's body. I'm going to show you how I got to that conclusion.
In America, over the last 10 years, guns that are not done in gang wars, right?
Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Chris Martinson of Peak Prosperity, here with a very special report for all of y'all. We're going to be talking about this today. We've got a new video to analyze here, which I think very conclusively solves a lot of questions. I know there's been a lot of speculation about what happened, what didn't happen. Was he wearing body armor? Was he shot from the right? Was he shot with a pistol? Was it an exploding mic? We're going to take care of all of that today. But first, we're going to have to start by setting up the scene so that we can all share a common understanding. Now, just to be absolutely clear, if you're not familiar with me, I did a lot of work on the Butler, Pennsylvania assassination attempt and murder of Corey Compitore. I looked at a lot of the sound files there. Here's how I work. I will gather all the data I possibly can. And then once I have that data, I'm going to try and see if it fits to a hypothesis. And if it doesn't work, I'll reject the hypothesis. But I'm very diligent about this. You can ask my team, anybody who knows me. I will go over the data, over it. I'll get all the way to the point of feeling like I have it all resolved. That happened multiple points over the past 8 days while I was analyzing what I'm going to share with you today. And I had to reject three separate conclusions that I'd come to because it just didn't fit or new data came out. That's how I roll. All of this could be revised tomorrow too if brand new data comes out. But let me walk you through how I got here and what I'm thinking. For those of you who like logical, deductive, methodical sorts of explanations and explorations, you're going to love this because that's who I am. If you want hyperbolic stuff with a lot of sensationalism, I'm not your guy, but I am going to get you to a place where we're going to both learn what happened here and learn some things along the way. I should also probably tell you that I am a gun aficionado. I've been shooting for well over 40 years at this point in time. I've probably shot 500,000 rounds. None of that means anything. There's a lot of people who shoot a lot of guns who still don't understand ballistics, still don't understand what happens in a human body. My background, my PhD from Duke University is in pathology, subspecialty toxicology. So yes, I've conducted autopsies. I'm familiar with the human body and I'm familiar with guns. And I know a little bit about ballistics, but we're going to see if we can put this together deductively together and come to some sort of a conclusion. So let's start here with the scene. We have to have a common understanding of the scene. Otherwise, the rest of this won't really make sense. So here's a drone shot from above. This is after the event. Charlie was shot on September 10th. And just day before September 11th, make of that what you will. And we see here, it's pathetic. That's the crime scene tape, and there's nobody to be seen actually investigating the crime scene because somehow they already knew what the answer was, I guess, and they didn't feel the need to do what you and I would have done, which is crawl around, take pictures from every possible angle, look for any projectiles, any evidence, anything. You never know after the fact what's going to be actually important later on. So you just document everything about this. There should be FBI people, state investigators crawling all over this. They ought to be taking transom shots to roof lines and measuring things and otherwise recording the incident as it is before it got disassembled, which happened surprisingly quickly. Here is a drone shot. I'm going to take myself out of this picture so you can watch all of it. So here is the oddly shaped area, and the tent would have been right about here, which we'll see in a second. These are all the different roof lines we would have to consider. And by the way, this is where the shooter was allegedly positioned, which I think I've conclusively ruled out way over here. So let's look at this together and see what we got. By the way, no need for audio on this. All right, here we are flying around, flying over. And as they swivel over, you can see over here, that's the tent where Charlie was sitting, basically straight under the apex of that tent, straight under there was where his chair was seated. So that point of that gives you some visual reference for where he was seated. Obviously, this whole courtyard here was full of people, absolutely crammed. There were people up on the rooftops, particularly over here. This promontory, this prow right here, I'm going to call that feature, is going to feature quite a bit. Notice this prow, these three windows, and that beam that comes down. This roof, very interesting to us, as we'll see later in this episode. And again, this is the alleged shooter location over here. So this is the basic setup. This is going to be very hard to analyze acoustically when we do get to the audio analysis, because there's a lot of surfaces for echoes to bounce off of. And indeed, it's a pretty messy situation to figure out what's going on. The shooter would have been lying here, would have ran across here. We'll see that video a little bit later. This is his alleged perch spot right there. And so, there was a video shot of somebody perched in that spot from that spot you just saw there. Come back down on in here. Notice this angle from right here. Let me back that up real quick again, because this is an important shot right here. Okay, so notice that there's a pretty good shooting angle as well if we wanted to right from there. Go forward just a tiny bit. Right from, as they zoom in here, right here. Yep, that would have been a good shooting spot. All right, so this is the alleged shooting position here. You can see they've got some evidence tags right there. Those are supposed to be elbow and knee indentations. As we can see, maybe it's pretty reasonable. I don't know what that's almost like. You can see four knuckles there or something, unless he was barefoot. But that's the alleged shooting spot. So if we look at this, there's clearly an angle down to where Charlie was sitting right there under that tent. So that's the story that they have. This was the shooter, was Tyler Robinson. He was sitting here, lone gunman with a .30-06. Shooting from that position right there. Now, I put this one in so that we can see there's this little promontory that helps us visually find this place again. So just to this side, the building side of this promontory over here, we would see those four indents and the crime scene tape and the evidence tags. So an alleged shooter was visible. You saw in the earlier video from the drone that they said, oh, here's the position that a video of the alleged shooter was taken. Again, this is that promontory prow that we just pointed out, and there is indeed some sort of a body sitting there. Now, just have to wonder, why weren't any of Charlie's teams tasked with binoculars or a drone? That would be a question for his security team to think this through. I don't understand how you do not have drones at any of these events at this point. Just as a matter of course, but that's me. If we measure this out, the actual distance from that, here's that promontory from above, here's the alleged shooter's position, it's about 140 yards. It's 139 yards if you measure it on Google. But of course, it's measuring the flat. And we have to measure the hypotenuse because the shooter was up in the air. Adds about a yard. So not a big deal. So 140 yards from the alleged shooter's position to Charlie's position. Now that matters because if we knew the actual rounds that were used, if they would just show us a picture of the two unspent rounds, plus the head cases, they're called, of the three cartridges, including the spent one they found in that rifle. It was allegedly the cartridge that was used to execute, murder Charlie Kirk. If we could see the head stamps are all the same and we could actually see what these bullets were, now we can perform some very precise calculations because we know the barrel length of the gun. We know the exact type of ammo. They have all very, very carefully characterized velocities and all that other stuff. So we would be able to tell within a millisecond or two, do we have the right answer? The fact that they've not released that information so far, a little bit of a yellow flag, if not a red flag for me at this stage. The other thing we should note, though, is that if this person was shooting square, they would be shooting straight this way, a little bit to Charlie's left. So there was about 9 degrees off axis. This would be on axis. A little bit 9 degrees off axis. Not a lot, but significant, and I'll show you how that comes into play a little bit later. So if they were shooting, if the shooter was dead in front of Charlie, right, shooting straight on, then you would expect any bullet wound you would see to travel straight through. But if you're off axis a little bit, then what happens is that bullet's going to travel off axis too, through, in this case, his neck or any other shooting spot. So just want to be clear about that. That's the setup of the scene. We're about 9 degrees off axis and about 9 degrees down sloping as well. Here you can see the 9 degrees off axis. Here's how I measure these sorts of things. Charlie was facing dead forward, which is very helpful in a very square setting, so we could get this pretty precise. Put a protractor on there, and you can see the shooter's position from a shot taken straight above, which is important. Gets us about 9 degrees off axis, 9 degrees downsloping. You know what? Let's call it 10 and 10, just to make it easy. Let's round up. 10 and 10. 10 degrees downsloping, 10 degrees off axis. Now we can talk about the kill shot. This is where I think we can conclusively prove that Tyler Robinson, the alleged shooter, did not take the shot that landed in Charlie Kirk's neck. I can't guarantee he didn't take a shot. I just can guarantee that the shot he took wasn't the one that killed him. And here's why. So again, we have a 10-10 situation here. 10 degrees off axis, which you can see a little here. 10 degrees downsloping. You can also appreciate that there's a downslope here. And so here's how that plays in. When we take that 10-degree downslope and take our magic protractor and put it on here, this is about how that bullet would have traveled through Charlie Kirk's body. So it wouldn't have come out, we wouldn't expect it to come straight out the back of the neck in this case, because he was a little bit slumped. He sat a little bit like this, yep. And that would have meant the bullet would have traveled roughly hitting right here on the front of his throat, about there. And it would have traveled a little bit down and come out in between his neck and his scapula, just down to the back a little bit. Here's the shot itself. We can see it was off the midline. It was a lot of people confused, myself included, for a while, because it looks a lot more like an exit wound than an entrance wound. But we can explain that now with the piece that comes a little bit later, why it has that appearance. Again, if this was coming down at a 10-degree angle and we place this on this mock-up of a human, we would see it's coming in somewhere between the C6 and the C7 vertebrae at that sort of level on the neckline, but it would have exited down here between C7 and the T1, okay? That's the thoracic 1 vertebrae. So somewhere in this zone is where we would have anticipated, roughly, it would have exited from a lateral height standpoint. We can also tell that this is from the shot that everybody saw from up front. I'm not going to show any blood or gore in here, but this is actually just 4 frames. So if frame 0 is before he gets shot, he's shot. Frame 2, frame 3, frame 4. This is frames 3 and 4. We can already see him in this pugilist pose. That's where his hand is already curled like this. That means that he's had some kind of very traumatic injury to the midbrain level. It was an instant death. So after traumatic brain injury, it's called decorticate posturing. We also call it the pugilist pose because people, if they fall back and hit their head and they get really harmed, they'll come up in what looks like a boxing pose, but it's not like this. Their hands are actually usually flexed in a little. So this is an abnormal involuntary posture characterized by rigid extension of the legs, flexion of the arms toward the chest with clenched fists, and inward rotation of the wrists, often resembling a defensive boxing stance. It typically indicates severe damage to the cerebral hemispheres or midbrain, is a sign of a poor prognosis. As soon as I saw this, the day of the shooting, when he tipped and went over like that with that decorticate posturing, I knew that it was a very bad situation for him, very unlikely to be survived. But this also gives us some data we're going to have to work with. Again, I tell you, we work with actual facts. The fact is that we have to account now for a very violent midbrain injury, something that happened so fast that just 1/10 of a second after the shot happened, 4 frames later, right? If this is 30 frames per second, by the third frame here, which is 1/10 of a second, that was an instant, as instant a response as you could possibly have, right? And for people who are out there thinking, oh, this could have been Hollywood and it could have been faked, it's impossible to fake something that quickly, that fast. And there it was. So then he just tipped up and over and dropped the mic and all of that. But we now have to account for a very violent insult to the midbrain or lower brainstem area. So that's part of the deal. It can't have been, for example, a very low speed pistol round shot from a concealed palm thing, a 32 caliber or something like that. It doesn't have the force necessary to cause a little puncture here, rattle around in there and cause this kind of damage. We need something that operates at an extremely high rate of speed. So this is part of our clue set. This is why it was confusing, because this is a tanned deer hide. That's what an entrance wound looks like from a 30 caliber bullet. I mean, it's like practically nothing, right? The exit wound, obviously much, much bigger and more ragged and all of that, And so here you can see it passing through a roughly 12-inch deer, though. A high-velocity round comes in, makes a little puncture, and leaves with a big hole and goes right through a deer. And there's a lot of stuff in a deer compared to a human neck. Now, if it was Tyler Robinson's shooting position, remember, he had a 10-degree downslope. So putting this as accurately as I could where I think that hole was in his neck, again, not middle, off to the side a little bit. So again, we're just looking at a side view, so we can't tell where it is, where that bullet hole is positioned laterally in this whole thing. But just from this position here, this would have been a 10-degree downslope, and that bullet should have come and passed about like that. Now, it's possible that it was, I've got it misplaced a little and the hole's a little lower and we can't really tell because its head's jerked back. It's possible, could theoretically have hit the first, maybe the second rib, in which case that bullet could possibly have been deflected. We'll get into bullet deflection more later, but here's the thing. Bullets are not deflected unless they hit something that's pretty hard. And I've got the data for that, and I'll show you what that actually means. From above, stylistically here again, it was 10 degrees downslope, but also 10 degrees, again, off axis. So off axis with the hole, this is the head, the neck would be this blue dotted line. I've placed the dot about where I would expect that wound would have been, put the 10 degree off axis onto this, and you see that it can't hit the spinal column, that the solid bones that exist out there in the neck, to bounce off of those and go down into his body cavity. It's just impossible. This shot is passing entirely through soft neck tissue. A 30-06 that hits there with that degree of angle is just going to blow out the back of the neck virtually every time. I mean, never say never, I guess, but the odds are too ridiculously low to even consider this as a reasonable hypothesis. The chance of that neck stopping or deflecting that bullet in just that amount of time, impossible. Now, I'll get into this a little more later, but the base explanation, so we can move on for those of you who are having some objections here, is that bullets do get deflected. I could expect this bullet to get deflected by his neck, but a bullet deflects a little bit at the beginning and it takes, 100 yards later, it didn't hit where you meant for it to hit. But it doesn't deflect instantly. Like, hunters don't shoot and hit a twig and the bullet hits the dirt right under the twig. It gets knocked off course a little bit and 100 yards later, you miss what you're aiming at because it does get deflected. I think people confuse what deflection really means. It doesn't mean the bullet instantly changes direction. It means it gets knocked off course. A bullet has a vector of travel with an immense amount of force. That's why they do the damage they do. That's why they kill. And that vector is along a very, very straight line. To get it to come off of that line, you have to have an equal and opposite force. This is Newtonian physics. It's impossible for a bullet to have thousands of foot-pounds of pressure and be deflected by just a pound of stuff and go an entirely different direction in just a few inches. Well, that's what a human neck is. That neck shot there, I would estimate, is about 5 inches of material that is involved. As well, time for a quick little anatomy lesson here. This is these are vertebra. This is the fourth cervical vertebra. Here's the seventh. This is the one we're interested in, potentially. And notice it has a body, which is pretty solid bone here, right? And here's the foramen, the spinal column heads down that thing. Then you have these little tiny things on the side, which are called tubercles. They're really insignificant. These are not elk bones, man of steel bones. These little anterior, posterior tubercles, these are the little wings out the side. They are very insignificant bones, right? The kind that your dog would just sort of chew up and, it'd be gone. And that comes into play because what we have to consider about these is that when we're looking at a cross-section of a human neck, the whole thing's upside down because I had to rotate it so that we're looking at, this would be the front of the body. I want to make sure that we're all maintained orientation. So I flipped the whole picture over. That's why all those words appear upside down to you. Here's about where that neck wound would have been on Charlie. Again, it was off the midline, just a little closer to the side than the midline, but I put this in the midline anyway. If we take a 10 degree angle through his neck, you will notice we barely even clip. This is bone material right here. We barely even clip the tubercle, which again is a completely insignificant bone. There's not a chance in the world that that bone caught that bullet and sent it down into his body if it clipped that. Otherwise, this is the exact path we would expect. And again, this is only maybe, 5, maybe 6 inches of material here. Almost all of it just muscle. nothing hard. There's really nothing that this is as close as you can get. They have this stuff called ballistic gel, which hunters and aficionados of bullets and ballistics use to simulate a body, right? Because it has about this right density. It's a gel. And when you shoot into the gel, it's kind of like this is almost a perfect approximation of shooting into ballistic gel because there's no bones here. There's nothing to interfere with what's going on. Now, if the round had passed straight through, it would have caused a huge rupture in the back, probably. It would have still caused immediate massive damage from the shockwave of the bullet, as well as the physical damage of the bullet traversing that tissue. So there's two ways that high-speed rounds actually cause damage. One is just the physical damage caused by the bullet making a hole through a body. But even more importantly, usually, is this shockwave that happens because the bullet is traveling at supersonic speeds, and it's traveling at a speed faster than water can move out of the way. And since water, which is a body, is not compressible, that water has to do something and go out of the way. So we're going to take a look at that real quick. So here's a pretty accurate representation of this. The gun is got about the same barrel length as the one that was allegedly used. Here we're using 150 grain normal whitetail. I'm using this one because this is one of the lower energy rounds you can actually get for a 30-06. They only get more energetic after that. They only cause more damage. But let's take a second together and watch what happens when a 30-06 bolt action rifle with a scope is shot. Those are just details to sort of match the alleged murder weapon. Let's see what happens when it's shot at ballistic gel.
Barrel with a Leopold VX3 HD scope up top. We'll be taking three shots from 100 yards, firing into 10% ballistics gel that has been calibrated to meet the FBI's ballistics testing protocol.
This is just how the gun culture works. You see all that stuff? Hey, we're going to do it from this known distance at something that's been calibrated to match the ballistic gel coefficient set forth by the FBI to match human body characteristics. And we know the distance. We know the they're going to measure the speed. We're going to measure all this. This is how the gun culture works. We measure stuff. This is really super well measured. We don't have to guess anymore because people have run this experiment over and over again. This is just one example.
And while ballistics gel isn't an exact proxy for big game, it does provide a repeatable medium through which to test various bullets and ammo against each other. After the shots, we'll examine bullet expansion, weight retention, penetration,
more
and
details.
Velocity. My goal is to provide hunters like you and I with the most objective information possible to help us make the best choice for our particular hunting situation.
So let's go ahead and shoot this stuff before the sun gets brighter or the wind gets stronger.
Watch this. Ooh, so the bullet traveled in from that side.
And we're down at the blocks after the first shot with a Norma 150 grain whitetail ammo. We have a good wound cavity, relatively shallow, at least compared to some of the...
Okay, so first up, notice what we're seeing here. This is the bullet way out here, and he's going to tell us how far it penetrated. This would have been about the width of Charlie's neck right here. This would have been the entrance wound, a little tiny thing. This would have been the size of the exit wound, more or less, some big raggedy thing. And again, this penetration by the bullet causes some damage, you know, just because it's like a hole puncher. It punches a hole through tissue that can, you know, traverse nerves, blood vessels, cause mechanical damage, but the real damage is actually caused by this giant shockwave that happens in here as the bullet comes in with approximately 2,000 foot-pounds of energy and dumps that into this gel, which is, again, it's a solid substance in the sense that it's water held in a spot, which is a lot like a human body. And so when that 2,000 foot-pounds of energy comes in, where does it go? It doesn't just magically dissipate. It has to go somewhere. And that's a big part of the story we're telling here today. All right, let's see what the penetration here was.
The heavier 30-06 ammo that I fired. Coming on back, we have the bullet captured right there, nice and pretty. And we got the tape measure set up. It looks like our penetration for this first shot is right about 19 and a half, just shy of 20 inches. All right, I'm going to yank that bullet out, swap the blocks, and go back for shots 2 and 3.
19 and a half inches, obviously a lot further than Charlie's putative 6 inches of neck that was there. The chance of a neck stopping this round, exceedingly low. Here's another gentleman who did it again. This time he got 31 inches of penetration, even like there's water on the lens down here, because it also went all the way through and busted these water bottles at the end. He probably didn't mix his gel up to be quite as stiff as the other guy, but we have that to go by. And so the conclusion here is the chance that Charlie's neck stopped a 30-06 round, even the most, let me put it this way, the least energetic of all of them that you could actually buy off the shelf, the 150 grain normal whitetail, it's not a possible thing. So now we can actually explain, though, that there was a bullet and it did stop in Charlie's body. And this took a lot of investigating to get to, and I'm not trying to garner views on the back of Charlie's death. I care about the truth. I just want the truth. And it's really important that we get the truth right here, because this was a political assassination. And I want to make sure that the people who did this are held responsible, which means I feel like I have a duty to get to the truth as much as possible. I think we all do, and think we all know that we can't trust our government to do that, that something's very wrong at the FBI at this point in time. We just don't know why, but they just aren't interested in conducting proper investigations. And it's a political assassination is not going to be something that the FBI is going to do a good job at, because obviously they don't do a good job with all sorts of political things. It's just how what's happened. And it's, I think, important that we understand what did happen. So I'm just here. I'm interested in the truth. Do with it what you will. But I think we've solved this. The bullet actually did stop in Charlie's body. Now, how is that possible? First, the evidence. Blake Bednarz came out with, apparently he located and purchased a video, and this video actually solves this case, and it's I'm good going for getting this, Blake, and putting it out there. Thank you so much. He says here, quote, something exploded underneath Charlie's t-shirt around the neckline, and the effect of that explosion is what caused a laceration to his neck. Before the explosion is audibly heard, Charlie's t-shirt ripples at the neckline, forming a visible shockwave. This is the first frame of that. Frame before this, Charlie's just sitting there. This is the frame of impact. So something very, very unusual got caught. I looked at every video I could, and unfortunately, there aren't enough of them, and I have questions about that and concerns about why there are so few videos, given the number of cameras I can see pointed at Charlie in the audience from some points of view at the moment of impact. We only had four good ones to work with, and three were kind of grainy and compressed, and I have questions, but that I'll save those for later. So this one actually magically, this camera frame, so these things are shooting at 30 frames a second typically, right? So 30 times a second, it just takes a picture. Now the problem is that this event that happened to Charlie where he got shot, capturing that exact moment of impact, well, the odds are against it, but it happened. And so I'm really glad it did, because it actually solves the case. So a lot of people speculating, oh my gosh, look at all this. There's a huge energetic event, and we're going to walk through this. So I have a very different take from this gentleman and a lot of other folks, but let's talk about it. This is the video, fairly high quality. As far as these things go, it was shot from pretty far back. This is a still from that video right before Charlie got shot. Here's where that camera was located, way up here. Again, remember I talked about that prow, the promontory? This camera is right at the corner of the prow, and it's pointed all the way down. By the way, a little foreshadowing. We're going to be looking at cowboy hat guy and red shirt guy a little later for some other reasons. Now, here's what happened. This is immediately before the shot. This is that first frame he's talking about, and this is evidence of what we call a high-speed cavitation event. Severe overpressure. This is what happens when a high-speed round enters a human body, a deer, ballistic gel. It's all the same. And so this cavitation event is what we're going to discuss here. So before we go there, let's talk about what that is. Some of my favorite shooters out there, the Michaleks, Lena Michalek carrying on in her father's, Jerry Michalek's incredible tradition. Anyway, here they are shooting. This is a much less energetic round than the 30-06. This is called a 300 blackout. They're shooting the 300 blackout. So what you're about to see is an energetic event that is less violent than what would happen if even the lightest 30-06 round was used. But it still is very instructive, and they did great job shooting this with an ultra high speed camera. And it looks like this. That's what happens when a bullet. Oh, you see that flash of the light from the from the recovery when it collapses back on itself. Let's watch that again. Bullet is fired. Boom. Okay. Now this, they have a camera here running at least 10,000 frames per second. I think this one's actually operating probably at a lot higher rate, but that's what it looks like when a bullet strikes. All that water has to go somewhere. That's a temporary cavitation. You get this huge expansion because all of the energy of the bullet has to be dumped somewhere. Again, even with the lightest of rounds for the 30-06 that we can imagine, we're still talking pretty close to 2,000 foot-pounds of energy. And what's a foot-pound? If I had a weight that it was a pound and I dropped it from a height of 1 foot, okay, and I let go, the energy that that has, that's how much energy a foot-pound is. A pound dropped a foot, you know? So that's one way to measure energy. Anyway, it's been used for a long time. It's more colloquial than useful, but it's, I mean, what is a foot pound? Right? There you go. And by the way, foot pounds of torque, which you would use on a torque ratchet, totally different concept in a sense. But this is a foot pounds. So imagine this, 2,000 foot pounds. Imagine having a 2,000 pound block that you drop from a foot. That would be 2,000 foot pounds of energy. So all that energy is captured in this little tiny thing that maybe weighs 150 grains, maybe 220 grains, depends which cartridge. Love to see the cartridges so we could tell exactly how many foot-pounds, but it's going to be anywhere from 1,900 to maybe 2,600 foot-pounds of pressure, depending on which cartridge was actually fired, if it was a 30-06 at all, which, again, we have questions, nothing but questions. But this is what it looks like, and you can see here, this is the moment of impact. You can, the bullet has just started to enter in. The bullet's actually right about here. And all of this energy is getting dumped into this. This bullet is decelerating really rapidly. And because of that, that energy has to go somewhere, and it does this. This is an overpressure event. You can see here that it's now much fatter and wider. And so I was expecting that we were going to see something like this if only just the right frame got captured. We would see that overpressure event. By the way, that out and back is very rapid. It's maybe 1/1,000th of a second. So capturing that event with a 30 frames per second thing, you're going to miss it more often than not. In this video, we didn't miss it. So again, zero chance a bullet traveling this path right here was going to be stopped by a human neck. Again, this is what it looks like even with a 300 blackout, a much less energetic round. A 30-06 would have been just way, way more larger of a cavitation event. But even with this, you can see it penetrates really far into the gel. Look how far it goes. This is traveling about 14 inches. 14 inches. Not a chance in the world the neck stopped a 30-06 round at that angle. Just wasn't going to happen. So here's that high-speed cavitation event. So what I did here was in the frame right before Charlie's shot, I just drew a reference diagram, a reference freehand little blue line there. This is the same line copy-pasted into exactly the same position because I made sure that you can see here's where the U's are, see where I cut off the F up here, see where the top is. Like I made these frames line up really, really well. So what you can see easily is Charlie's neck is now much outside of the line on the back, way outside of the line on the front. Now I can begin to explain the so-called exit wound because this little tiny thing went in and it should have made a little tiny entrance wound if it went through and through. It didn't. This round entered, dumped all of its energy into Charlie's body, and it was in the upper body cavity, and you can see his neck expand and his whole upper chest expand. This explains his necklace, which flew off the back of his head. That clasp was broken because it just got pulled so fast, it must have broken that chain and throw it around the neck. So we can explain all of that now. Okay. This is full evidence that he had a high energy, a high speed round entered his body and dumped all of its energy into his body. So this is an important clue because it tells us a lot about where the shooter must have been, and it wasn't where Tyler Robinson was. Can't have been. It just doesn't pan out. By the way, people saying that this is his mic, that it exploded. In almost all the other things, you see this mic in all the shirt moving violently up into Charlie's left, our right. You can see here at the moment of first impact, it's hardly moved at all yet, right? Why is that? Well, because his body is just now expanding and pulling, and because his body puffed and pulled with that cavitation event, that's what actually threw his shirt, grabbed the lapel mic as part of the shirt. All of that stuff that we saw where everything threw up tells me that his body swelled up a lot more on the left side where it pulled the shirt up that direction. But this magic shot right here, this exact frame rate caught it at exactly this moment where we see the cavitation event, that first 1,000th of a second, but it hasn't been enough time to transfer that energy to see all of this stuff travel up this way. So it answers a whole lot of questions for us. So I just put together a little clip here. We're going to watch back and forth so you can watch this event enough times to maybe settle it in your head as well. Before, after. Before, after. Just pick a spot to look at, maybe this side, and just watch the neck expand. Watch the neck expand, particularly here where he was shot on this side. You can see there's a huge output bulging right here from that overpressure event. That's what grabbed the shirt and threw it. That's why everything travels up that direction. That is what a severe overpressure cavitation event looks like. And if we didn't have this particular video, I wouldn't be able to be as conclusive as I have been about it. But now I've seen exactly what it is. By the way, not a chance in the world these guns could have caused those physics. They just don't have the pressure capabilities. They do not have the foot-pounds of force. This one, I think, shoots a 38, a 380. Some of them shoot an actual 38. This little thing shoots a 32 caliber thing. Somebody saw somebody with a skull tin in their back pocket, thought, could it be this? There's not a chance in the world these little weapons could have caused this sort of an overpressure event. Not a chance. Couldn't have happened. Now, here's the thing, though. I did get this part wrong because Andrew Colvett came out and said, hey, there was no exit wound, you know, and he went on to explain that the bullet's in the body. He said variously the doctor found it, then later said the coroner found it. We got questions about all that. But I said, hey, this is next level BS. Standard 30-06 round goes all the way through 14-inch pine trees with ease. I know this because I've shot them. That's with full metal jacket 30-06 round, but it punches right through 14-inch southern pines because that was my shooting range in North Carolina, and I had this stand up, and I was shooting my friend's M1 Garand, and every round went right through that tree. Not just sort of through it. The back of that tree was splintered with big, giant, like, splinters flying out of it. Big 6-inch foot-long splinters. Like, a lot of energy still left in those rounds. But there's not, even with, like, the lightest 30-06 hunting round, you're still, a neck is not stopping that round, okay? And I also said, well, wait a minute. If the foot-pounds of force, if Charlie's neck had absorbed that, right, his whole head would have violently rocketed backwards, but we didn't see that. So I can't suspend the laws of physics like they asked me to on 9/11, not doing it, right? And then I got a lot of people saying this. They said, hey, lighter grain ammo in the angle matter here. Okay, fine. Ask any hunter. Lighter grain ammo in some loads in 30-06 don't penetrate deer necks, for example. It has to hit a lot of bone if that's true. Also common for the bullet to change direction upon impact. Yeah, it's common, but it's not like the way they're saying it here. I mean, I don't know what people think. It's like that, like the bullet hits something and it just immediately goes in a whole new direction. That's not how physics works in this case. Yes, bullets can be deflected. Yes, if they hit something really, really hard, they can deflect at a more severe angle. If a bullet hits something hard enough, it will just shatter immediately because all that energy, it can't bounce. Bullets aren't bouncy. They're made out of lead and with a copper jacket, and both of those just peel apart and shatter if they hit anything too hard. So there's only so far a bullet can actually get deflected before it just shatters anyway. And it has to hit something really hard. So let's talk about this. Gunshot wounds. Here are all these different wounds. This is 4 inches on this scale right here. So a 357 Magnum, they say here, creates this wound channel, this cavity here, but it goes straight through. 38 Special, straight through. 9mm travels further. It might tumble in the body, but only after it's traveled, I don't know, a couple feet, right? Or foot or two at least. What's that? 4, 4, 4, at least a foot. 22, yeah, doesn't penetrate that far obviously 22 long rifle a little further, maybe an AK-47, the 5.45, it could also tumble, but not at first, not for the first 5-6 inches. It doesn't just go in the neck and then just go down into the body. It can't happen. It's physically impossible. It doesn't work that way. And here, the M14 and 308 round, you see this thing's just going straight on through, right? So in no circumstance do we have bullets like suddenly veering off the other direction. What would have had to happen with a 10 and 10 for it to end up in Charlie's body? It would have had to hit this extremely soft tissue on his throat and then somehow turn down into his body as if it hit a 45 degree steel plate. It doesn't happen. It's just, to ask me to believe that is like asking me to believe that office fires took down Building 7. I'm just not doing it. It's just not a thing. Okay, so that's how we roll out here in the real world where we deal with physical reality. If bullets do fragment, right, they will penetrate along that main vector of travel before they fragment. So you might say, oh gosh, look, this fragment went way off axis here. The bulk of this whole thing came this way and it dumped in that main direction. Again, this would have been the back of Charlie's neck. It would have been a very ugly wound with a lot of spray behind it. Even handguns will travel at least 12 inches in a straight line through ballistic gel. They don't deviate. They don't tumble. They don't turn. You can see some little sort of turns maybe at the end of the travel. Things are going slower, but they too make these wound cavities on the front end. And by the way, these things have really, really, really have very much less energy. Order magnitude less energy than what you would see with a 30-06 round. Rifle rounds are just a whole different category, but I included handgun rounds to show that even those will penetrate 12 inches of gel and do it with relative ease. So again, we have to have just a simple reminder, a 10-degree angled shot hitting that part of Charlie's neck pretty much has a zero chance of not penetrating all the way through. Going to penetrate and exit easily. 6 inches instead of 19 inches, 20 inches, 27 inches. In fact, let's carry on with this story. Here's some people did really good. They're shooting a 6.5 Creedmoor versus a 308. These are going to have fairly comparable terminal ballistic characteristics to a 30-06. Not exactly the same round, but close enough. Let's just watch this together. I love how these guys do this.
The Tika T3, chambered in 6.5 Creedmoor. 140 grain Federal Power Shock. Launch velocity of 2750. Should hit that block at 2546. Let's to the range to the bench. Up first, we're going to shoot the Tika T3, chambered in 6.5 Creedmoor.
Hold up. Sorry, I accidentally restarted. But again, notice every detail, how far it is. They're going to measure the velocity. They know exactly which round. The rounds have various characteristics. This is just how the shooting community rolls. I'm part of that shooting community, which is why I'm a little bit annoyed to have so many people say, oh, well, I shoot and bullets can be deflected. So it's possible that this thing could have gone into his neck and then ended up in his body. I also, these guys did a great job filming from multiple angles. Great job. I hacked it all up. I'm sorry, guys, if I butchered your stuff. I just wanted to clip together some of their shots and take out a lot of the intervening talk, which is great. You should watch it. But we're just going to watch, I think, 4 rounds go into ballistic gel. And again, I think you're going to see what the story here is.
140 grain Federal Power Shock. Launch velocity of 2750. Should hit that block at 2546. Let's send one. All right, at the block.
Ooh.
25 9/16 inches of penetration. Pretty exceptional.
25 inches of penetration on this one, all more than 19 inches, which we saw on the other one. Here you see, oh, look, the bullet did deflect. But notice when we talk about deflection, if they were aiming here, that bullet is indeed deflected by this soft gel, but not in the first 6 inches. I mean, deflection just means it hits and it's heading in a slightly new direction, but not within the, like, if we saw this thing hit here and exit here, I'd be like, okay, you never see that. This is the most deflected one you'll see in this whole series. But when these people say bullets deflecting, we're talking about putting a slightly new angle on its trajectory, not it having an entirely new direction of travel that is orthogonal or wildly off axis compared to its initial vector of travel. So this thing hits here. You can see all the smoke pouring back out of this because it heated up this block Remember we saw that thing when it expanded on the blackout and then it collapsed and you saw that burst of light. There's all this heat too, because when you dump 2000 plus foot pounds of pressure, that gets converted into heat as well. So that's what's actually happening here. There's the bullet itself is kind of hot, but most of this steam coming out the back end is because of the violent heating of all that water in the gel when that bullet dumped its foot pounds of energy into the gel. Because the energy has to go somewhere. Law of conservation of momentum, it's a thing.
For a lead core bullet.
That trigger, and see how it does. All right, solid work by the old 308. We're looking at 19¾ inches of penetration with the 150 grain power shocks.
Ooh! Look at that one.
Shot out. Let's examine this wound cavity. Tremendous penetration. Very characteristically copper.
36 and 3/4 inches. That's a copper. Solid copper slug.
All right, range is clear. Let's walk down and check out the block. All right, look at what we have here. The 165 grain trophy copper showing a lot more penetration. Looking at 32 and a half.
Okay. So even with, this is fairly high-speed photography, but it's not ultra-high-speed photography. And with that, you would notice, like, when you watch this one, you can't see that expansion. That takes, again, that's a 1/1000th of a second kind of a thing-ish. So that's why it's very hard to capture, and it's very rare that we would see that, but we did see that just magically on that Blake Bednar's video that he released. So we saw that, and because of that, we're able to see that hyper extension of Charlie's upper frame and neck, that super cavitation that happened there. Watch this last one again. Just see if you can see that moment where it went and it expands back. And this is fairly high speed photography they're doing here. Not ultra high speed though.
Walk down and check out the block.
Watch this.
All right, look at what we have here. The 165.
You can sort of see a little hump on it, right?
The 165 grain trophy.
Very hard to see. Watch again. See that little hump right there?
All right, look at what we have here. The 165 grain trophy.
And you barely saw it, right? We missed a lot of it just because the frame rate didn't quite get it. 32 and a half inches. So again, every single time you see a bullet with this sort of terminal characteristics of, you know, a couple thousand foot-pounds of pressure, it's going to penetrate 19, 20, 25, 30 inches of gel block, which means there's not a chance in the world it's being stopped by 5 inches of neck, 6 inches of neck, and a little tubercle of the vertebrae. It's not a possible thing. It's just too low of a possibility. All right, now we're going to have to, so given this, we have conclusive evidence that Charlie was shot with a high-speed round, and it dumped all of its energy into his body. So now we have some physics to work with, and we're going to have to solve for some shooting angles that could match the physics we now have. Now, again, Colvett says down here that the coroner recovered the bullet, okay? He said, in the end, the coroner did find the bullet just beneath the skin. So the bullet implies that there was enough of a bullet left that there was an actual bullet. If it's the whole bullet and it's not fragmented, I'm going to have other questions. And we're going to have to look at that bullet very, very carefully and see what it was. Again, if we just had some basic information, what were the cartridges actually used? Was our bullet recovered? Can we see a picture of that bullet? What did it weigh? We will know a lot of things at that point in time. But they're going to, of course, withhold all of that evidence from us just because. By the way, we did just get this morning and heard this.
So I did do the request. They emailed me back. He did not go in for an autopsy. The death certificate was signed by the doctor at the hospital.
What?
Oh, okay. Can you?
What?
He did not go in for an autopsy. The death certificate was signed by the doctor at the hospital.
What?
Okay. Can you just do a?
That's the dispatcher, Utah dispatcher. I don't know if this is accurate or not, but So now we have a conflict here. Did he go in? Was there a coroner? Coroner would typically be the person conducting an inquest. By law in Utah, you have to conduct an autopsy in a murder. They said maybe the dispatcher had it wrong. I certainly hope this is an error. Obviously, when you have one of the most significant political assassinations of your lifetime, you conduct an autopsy. If they didn't, yellow flags, red flags are going to go up again, big time. Now, Candace Owens said that she got footage from this, also from Andrew Colvett here. Got footage from this camera I would very much like to see that camera. I'm also going to put out a call here to TPUSA to release the other camera that was from the front, that footage as well. And we're going to need the microphone recordings from Charlie's mics. That will solve a lot. We'll be able to do some crack boom analysis. We'll be able to see things. We can resolve a lot. If they're interested, that is, in getting to the bottom of this whole thing, they would release that data. Now, again, we saw this overpressure event. We saw how it went from sitting there before the shot to after the shot. You can see all that expansion of just everything. His skin, though, in particular, is expanding wildly. That is consistent with something inside his body creating a lot of pressure, pushing his body out. It's not consistent with an explosion from the outside, as some people have speculated. This is full evidence that we had an overpressure cavitation event. So how did that happen? How did that bullet come to dump all of its energy in Charlie's body? Now, this is where we can get to some pretty conclusive answers. So now we have to start thinking about some other shooting spots that can both solve for a couple of things. For the bullet to have entered Charlie's body and to have stayed in there, we need two things to be true. It needs to have come from a higher off-axis angle, so it had a chance of hitting the spinal column, and it needed to come in from a much higher angle too, so that it was already heading down, because it's too much to expect a relatively flat bullet to hit something and bounce down. That's just not how these things work. Again, it would have to transfer all of its energy and then be deflected. Charlie's spine would have had to have had the ability to resist a 2,000-pound force compressed into a little tiny thing with a cross-section of just 0.30 inches. Not really going to happen. Here's a couple other spots that we have to consider. So this is the area. Charlie's tent would have been right here, facing this way, because this, is, I believe, is right up axis. This thing confused me for a while. I thought they were stairs on the first things I was watching. It's a waterfall feature. And so this helps guide us where we are. Again, this is the promontory where that video was shot from over here. There's a post right here. We're going to have to keep an eye on all these things, because as we speculate about if we were conducting an investigation, where would we look very, very carefully? There is a shooting angle that's right through the between these two trees, comes right down the waterfall. And again, that waterfall would have pointed right at Charlie's tent. So this is a potential shooting spot here. And guess what? If you're in that spot, the measured angle is that would have come in at about 43 degrees, and it's a 20 degree downslope angle because the building is closer. It's almost as high as the other shooting position, but that's much further back, so that lowers the angle. And so those are the measurements we got. About a 43 degree off axis angle, 43 degrees, you know, coming in 43 instead of not 9, 43. And also 20 degrees. Yeah, let's put it this way, 20 degrees instead of 10. Now we're at an angle where there's a chance that thing's going to come and come straight into the body. Now it really honestly has a chance of doing that from that shooting position. So that's where I would have looked at. A 20 degree angle here, this puts it, as you can see here, this is set at 20 degrees. Now this thing's coming much further down into the body. And as well, once you're at a 20 degree angle, you start to hit these bones guaranteed. The rib bones, if you were off axis, but also you start to hit the center of the spinal column. And at a 43 degree angle, that puts that bullet coming in. First thing it's going to encounter is the center mass of the thoracic vertebrae, if it's gone that low. Maybe C7, but I think it might have hit T1. Best guess. Of course, some autopsy photos and some x-rays would help us resolve all of this pronto. And we don't have access to any of that yet. Also, this comports with something else. Notice if we come across here, we do still transect the jugular, also the carotid. This is a little bit of a gruesome detail, but I think it's important. When Charlie slumped over, if you saw, all this blood, but it sort of slumped out. And it also took a second or two for that to happen. Not a second or two, but about a half a second to us. There was a little gap between him having this hole, right, in his neck and starting to slump and then this blood sort of spilling out. It wasn't spurting out. So that tells me that his heart was stopped at that point in time. Because if you transect the carotid and the heart is pumping, very high pressure, it's pretty obvious. If you haven't seen it, it's not forgettable. So when people have arterial damage and their heart is pumping, you get a lot of spurting. His arterial pressure was already at zero. There was no spurting. So what did we see? we saw this little gap, the hole shows up, a little gap, and then we saw this sort of blood just sort of slump out. That was his, probably a combination of both the jugular or the venous blood, maybe even some of his carotid artery, maybe. But what we saw is it slumping out, and my explanation is that huge overpressure shock, it pushed the blood away, and then it just sort of had to come back and slump out. So Charlie was already dead with mechanical damage to the heart, I'm going to guess here, because even if you, you know, decapitate somebody on a guillotine, the heart's going to pump for a little while, because that's how the heart is. It just doesn't give up the ghost that easily. So his heart had stopped. How did his heart stop? His heart stopped because that bullet dumped down into his chest cavity and probably caused a lot of mechanical damage, as well as obviously all the neuronal damage and all that other stuff. So that's, this fits very, very well with this. We need a new shooting angle that can account for what we're seeing. Now, what's interesting is there was this great video taken from the side. Thank you to the person who sent that to me. I got it off your Google Drive. Really appreciate it. High quality. I trust this video a lot. This one was off to the side. Charlie's left. You know, if Charlie's facing forward, stage left. They're over here. They're facing this way. This is the promontory. This is that other video camera we're looking at. But this is about 2 seconds, maybe 3 seconds after the shot has been taken. Look at this guy. I know eyewitnesses can be a little iffy, but this guy is pointing, and he's pointing right along the axis, more or less, of this promontory axis, right? It has a face. He's pointing along. And, hey, look at this guy. We got cowboy hat guy here, too. Yep. They're both sitting here looking in a certain direction. If I place this guy, he's sitting right about at the top. These are all these tiers of concrete and grass and concrete and grass, concrete and grass. This guy is just off of the promontory prow, and he's just a little bit off this side of it, and that places him. There's the promontory prow. There he is right there. He's pointing here. He's pointing somewhere up on this building. He's not pointing this way, which is where the alleged shooter would have been. He's clearly not pointing that way. He's pointing here. And cowboy hat guy is like doing the same thing. He's like, they're both looking at the same spot. I would want to talk to red shirt guy if I was investigating this. Red shirt guy would, I think, have some of the most reliable, most of these people, a lot of, you know, pandemonium and screaming and usual stuff going on. But this guy, he just stands up, hands in his pocket, and he's like, right there. So maybe that's meaningful, maybe not. So that's red shirt guy, and also cowboy hat guy. He's one lower down, looking in the same exact direction. This is where I would be looking, because these are the shooting positions that actually match the physics of what we see in that frame. And the fact that Charlie has the bullet in his body, the fact that it's nearly impossible to consider that a 10 degree angle, 10 degree downslope, 30-06 is going to be stopped by a human neck or deviated within those first few inches so it can actually make it down into the body. The request that this 30-06 hits soft, soft neck tissue. I mean, if it had hit a collarbone, I'd be like, oh, okay, now I'm going to have to, like, you know, guess a little. It hits the softest part of the human body. This is the softest part. I mean, this is just, there's nothing going on here, right? It's like a little bit of cartilage, some veins, a lot of muscle, but that's about it. And it entered here, and that within a few inches, because remember, it can't have traveled all 6 inches and then bounced back in the body. It would have had to have deflected within the first 2 to 3 inches, tops, to go down into the body cavity. You saw all the ballistic gels with me. That just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. There's not a single example where you can shoot ballistic gel and you see the bullet immediately within an inch or two take a really hard turn. The reason for that, 2,000 foot-pounds of force traveling along a single vector is not easily dissuaded that it should go in a whole new direction. That's just physics. I'm not going to suspend my physics here. I didn't do it on 9/11. I just refuse. Physics is what it is. So best guess for me, though, is this is where I would be looking very, very carefully. That should be scoured very, very carefully for clues right there, because that matches everything almost perfectly. Again, that's just fitting the data that we have at this point in time. So that's where we should all be looking. Now, also, this is a little goofy. Do you remember this? So on September 12th, the FBI released the rooftop video. Now we're going to start to catch some of the yellow flags that bother me a little bit. And this ties into the putative place where I'm expecting that we should be looking, because this is the building that the shooter was on, allegedly. Here's the promontory prow, is going to be right there. But the building we would be interested in would be right through, there's windows here. This is a whole, like, window through and through, windows all the way around. Just on the other side of that, we'd be interested to know who was on that building over there, right at the top where that finger's pointing, because that's where I would suspect the shooter would have been. But this is weird. So they released this rooftop video. A couple weird things about it. First, why didn't they give us the whole thing? Why didn't they show him climbing up on the roof? This camera would have caught that. Why don't they show him taking the shot? The camera would have caught that. They didn't show us that. What did they show us? They showed us this. They zoom in, and again, the building we're interested in is right back here through these things. But this is also after the shooting, because he's already running. You can see him running right there, comes around the side of the building, runs across. It looks like a shot with a potato cam again. I don't know. And there he is. And there's this weird purpley roof haze over here. I don't know what's going on with that. He's swinging down now. Allegedly, where's the rifle? We don't know. He's got something in his hands, but it's sort of floppy. We don't know. It's a lot of weird stuff going on here. Okay. So what's so weird about this? Well, A, they didn't show us all the earlier stuff. It gets even weirder than that. Watch this. Somebody sharp-eyed caught this and said, at Dogs versus World, check this out. Watch the shadow. Where's his shadow? What happened to the shadow? They put their dog rooftop. Look, shadow, blip, a little blip of, where's the shadow? He's running on white stuff. Should be a stronger shadow. Watch this little blip on the white stuff, blip. Where's the shadow? So they released an edited video. And look, watch here. See all those, we can see him running past through those windows. I told you there were windows through and through. Look, they just go, look. What is going on here? Why are we getting poorly edited videos? Look, there's a pedestrian over here that just, they just disappear. And you can see all of this in the video that the FBI released. These aren't artifacts from this person zooming in. Like, this is, you can watch all that. Here, let's watch it together on the original video that the FBI released. So now that you know what to look for, watch the shadow. This is in real time. This is what they released. Nothing fancy. I just pulled this down. You can sort of see him through there, but again, those things waver. Shadow, bloop, no shadow. On the white stuff, no shadow on the most highly reflective surface. Weird. Watch the pedestrian. Disappears. Goes behind the tree. I guess they took a hard right and went through the bushes and decided to walk. Anyway, totally bizarre. And so we have to ask questions like, well, why is that? It's crudely edited. We don't know why. The shadow's gone. It's bizarre. So here are my conclusions for today. First, the observed overpressure event caught magically in that one frame in that Blake Bednar's video there, in Charlie's neck and upper torso, is fully consistent with a high-velocity rifle round entering his neck and then torso and expending all of its considerable energy there. I have high confidence in this conclusion at this point because we can see that expansion happen with our own eyes. The chance that a .30-06 round fired from Tyler Robinson's alleged perch did not penetrate and exit Kirk's neck, extremely low, as in impossibly low. I have very high confidence in that conclusion. Therefore, the actual shot must have come from some other elevated location to Kirk's left. Medium confidence. I only have medium confidence in those positions over there. For high confidence, we would need to know precisely which round was used and have access to autopsy reports and x-rays. Then I think we could, and the wound channels, we would have very high confidence at that point to conclude exactly what happened. They're probably not going to release that information. Reason, we know where the entrance wound is. If we know which vertebrae, where that bullet first struck as it deflected further down into the body, we could take that measurement to that neck wound and we could draw a line and we'd know exactly where to look. And if it doesn't comport with a 10 in 10 from the front, which it won't, they're not going to release it. Best guess. But I only have medium confidence in exactly where that shot came from because I don't have the rest of that data, and that's just how I roll. No small pistols of any sort could replicate the observed effects. I have very high confidence in that. and no exploding mic or pager. Extremely high confidence in that. The release footage of Tyler Robinson climbing down off the roof was manipulated. Medium confidence in that. There could be other explanations, but I don't have very many good ones. Let me know what you think. And so then just to wrap this up, because I want to just put one last thing to bed while we're here together. Was Charlie Kirk wearing body armor? Hey, his wife said no. TPUSA has said no. But no, he wasn't, because they don't make body armor with outlines of crosses and nipples. And you can see on his back, see how smooth that shirt rested on him? It was a very light fabric. And looks like a nice fabric, too, by the way. And as he's leaning forward, you can't see any straps. You can see his back musculature. There's no strappage on there. Some people said he could have been wearing what's called compression-fitting body armor, compression shirt. It's a very tight-fitting shirt. And you can actually, it has a pocket where you can slip a plate in, maybe one of these very fancy alloy, titanium alloy plates. Possible, but notice here that they all have straps and things that we would have seen somewhere. We would be able to detect that, okay? All of them. Every model I looked at is going to have sorts of bulges. You can see there's seams running around the edge here. You know, even if he had something on the front, which was magically, you know, not showing up here, or here, very high confidence that there was no compression shirt body armor in there. All of them have straps. So answer, no, he was not wearing body armor. And I conclude that again with very high confidence. So here's where I started this whole investigation, thinking about these things. We had to account for the physics of Charlie's shirt blowing up into the left, his left, right? We had to account for his head movements. That has now been solved for, so I've crossed that out. We have to account for the fact that we are told a 30-06 round of some sort entered but did not exit. A slightly off-axis neck shot, that did not happen that way. Full confidence in that. Now, I still have to dive into whether or not the sound files match the putative shooting perches and weapons. These sound files are the worst I've ever seen. I investigated so many of them from the Trump shooting. Here's a little foreshadowing. They all lined up. They all lined up perfectly. They all matched. These are not matching for some reason, and I have my suspicions about that, which we'll get into later in the next episode. Whether or not Charlie was wearing body armor, ruled that out. He was not. Now we have to talk about how the alleged shooter could have gotten into position. We have oddities in the official statements about the subject, Tyler, where he was, what clothes was he wearing, did he disassemble the rifle? That story is a hot mess. We could look into it, but I've seen enough to know that that's all diversion. The shot was not taken from a 10-10 angle. 10-10. Didn't happen. Sadly, we have a lot, many more oddities, including the fact that so few original recordings remain available for analysis, in contrast, again, to Butler, Pennsylvania, where we had 10 high quality to work with, and the absolute flooding of social media with poison well theories. I have ideas for why that's happening, too. This has more and more of a feel of a deep state operation or somebody who has the power and the capability to poison the well, as they've done so effectively, to spread all these false ideas, to have pulled down the original source files, and to have queered all of the sound files so they don't they just don't line up. We're just having a devil of a time lining them up. And maybe that's because it's a complicated auditory environment. Let me hold off on that one until I come to a full conclusion, but I'm troubled by how few matching sound files I have to make sense of this particular situation. But again, until I know exactly what round was used, I don't know. We're going to have trouble with that. So I'd love to see the recovered round. We have to know exactly the body damage inside of Charlie. That'll allow us to calculate pretty accurately where that round had to have come from, because it's going to have traveled pretty much straight until it hit that. Where's the first damage? What's the first vertebrae that shattered in his torso? Because it would have shattered it as it broke around in there. So we need to know those sorts of things in order to conclusively say the shooter was there. If the shooter was there and not there, that's an enormous finding. That's what all of this physical data leads me to at this point in time. And the fact that the FBI is not actively or openly pursuing this in this same sort of a logical deductive way is also something of a tell in this story, as far as I'm concerned. So that's why we do what we do. And thank you very much for listening. Let me know what you think about all this. If you have any original files, you shot it on your phone, please get hold of me. Please get hold of me on Twitter. Please get hold of me through my website, Peak Prosperity. Do what you need to do, because if we have those original files, we can probably take another steps towards solving this. Until then, I'm going to continue to burrow into the sound analysis. I'll get that to you as soon as I possibly can, but let me know what you think about all this. Thank you much, and let's figure this out together. Thanks for now. I'm Chris Martinson of Peak Prosperity. See you next time.